Not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about inside intelligence. Not that we're going to speak about anything improper, but we have an outstanding guest, Ellen McCarthy, president, the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, former Fed. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning, Bob.
It's great to have you here. It's been a long time. We've never done the show together. And John, we've done the show together a lot. John Elliott, federal benefit strategist, retired Fed fellow seminar presenter. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
All righty, Ellen. Inside intelligence. We've got some bullet points here. And says for the second consecutive year, the intelligence community was named as one of the top 10 best places to work in the federal government, according to an independent analysis of federal workers' job satisfaction and commitment compiled by the partnership of da-da-da-da. Anyway, what makes the intelligence community such a great place to work?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons that the intelligence community is a great place to work. One, I think, is unity of mission. I think it's very clearly understood across the workforce what intelligence is supposed to be doing, who we support. And as a result, everybody feels a part of their agency or the community. That's proven time and time that self-actualization comes from feeling like you are a contributor to a mission. And so I think that's one aspect of the intel community that most of the workforce would tell you they have. Of course, not everybody. Not everybody's happy. I think some of it is we have personnel policies that are a little more flexible. So as a result, we can provide training opportunities. We can provide promotion opportunities. We can provide opportunities to travel that you don't always get across the government. So I think that's another reason. Plus, the reality is since 9/11, this is an opportunity to support your country. And I think at the bottom line, most people, would love to work in a career field where they are doing something good and helping their country. And intel is certainly one place you can do that.
Has there been an uptick in applicants, or was there an uptick 9 years ago after 9/11?
Oh, tremendous uptick.
So it was dramatic.
Yeah. I mean, that was for two reasons. One, just because you had, especially amongst sort of the new college graduates, sort of folks under the age of 30, folks just wanted to help out. Plus, there was a budgetary aspect to it. Intel budgets rose dramatically. There was a hiring frenzy across the intelligence community, so the agencies were hiring. And so for the first 5 years, it was, there's a lot of growth. We're not there right now. In fact, we're in an interesting period in the intel community's history where we're going through sort of a retraction. Budgets are being realigned. The community is being looked at differently and being managed differently. So as a result, there's not the hiring frenzy, but there's still great opportunity for people if they want to come work.
Why so? Why the pushback?
Well, I think what's happened 10 years later, it's 10 years since 9/11, that's what this year will be, is that when you look at what the intel community does, it's very important. It's critical to our national security. But also there was just tremendous growth, and it wasn't always smart growth. Everybody was trying to help. Congress was trying to help. The executive branch was trying to help. So there was huge increases in budgets, supplemental budgets. And now, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to see that it's just huge. But are we getting the value for our dollar? And so now the Director of National Intelligence, Jim Clapper, the Secretary of Defense are saying, we've got to look at this. We have to look at the state of our economy. We have to look at the state of budgets. And we really need to manage more smartly. And so over the next, Well, the Department of Defense, they're engaged in a huge effort to look at efficiencies, how they can gain efficiencies and reprogram money to programs where they need it. And the Director of National Intelligence is doing the same. So it's not this frenzied growth.
Yeah, there was, of course, a few months ago, the Washington Post series about a lot of intelligence overlap.
The Dana Priest series in the Washington Post.
That's right, Dana Priest.
And that gets back to like the military. You got the Air Force, you got the Army, whatever else. And is that somewhat like we go to a number of agencies and do retirement mid-career seminars there. And, of course, they always remain nameless. But it seems like, do they do the same thing? I mean, there's the one big one and then there's the other big one and some of the smaller ones.
Right.
Do they get caught in cross currents with, I'm already doing this. Why do you want to know about it?
In terms of duplication across the... Yeah, I think there certainly is duplication across the intelligence community. The intelligence community is 18 agencies. The military services have an intelligence component. The Department of Homeland Security has an intelligence component. And then, of course, you have CIA, DIA, NSA, NGA, NRO. And there's a few other cats and dogs, the Department of Energy, Department of Transportation. Absolutely, there is some overlap. But I would argue, and I think the Director of National Intelligence would agree, that you want some overlap. You don't want just one assessment of a situation, especially if it's the wrong assessment. And so in some cases, having duplication and analysis is a really good thing if you want to get to ground truth. In other cases, it may not be necessary if you have 16 different computer systems that are all doing the same thing but not talking to one another. That's an area where you may find some efficiency. So that's part of what the DNI and the Secretary of Defense are doing right now, is looking to see where there is unnecessary overlap and essentially making cuts to those kind of programs.
When you look to recruit to fill vacancies or to join up, what's the profile of somebody that's never worked for the feds? And then we'll talk about somebody that's worked for the feds and maybe wants to transfer in. How about somebody that's never worked for the feds? Let's say a recent college graduate,
right,
or maybe somebody mid-career that worked for, well, whatever. They work outside the government. What is the profile of the person? And I guess it's kind of wide open. It could be a computer person. It could be a different person.
Right.
But what do they look for? Is there anything general?
That's a great question. It's a tough one to answer because there's so much diversity across the IC. Of course, we're looking for people with language skills. We're looking for people with technical skills, engineering, software development. That's sort of the obvious science and technology kind of background. But there's also this huge component where in the analytic field, there is really no single best. You don't have to be a political science major. Some of our best analysts have been art majors, people who look at the world a little differently. I think in terms of analysis and collections, you're looking for somebody who has critical thinking skills, and that can come from pretty much any graduate degree or any background.
What about economics?
Oh, absolutely. That's the Treasury runs the Financial Crimes Network. Across the intelligence community, there's a need to stay abreast of trends in economics and commerce. So absolutely. That's where there is no single, there are colleges and universities that offer undergraduate and graduate degrees in intelligence. That's certainly one way of doing it. But the intelligence community recruits from a very diverse candidate pool.
So if somebody who is working for the IMF who'd had some experience in international banking, would they be a prime?
Absolutely.
Recruit?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
As well as accountants? I had to
right
ask
now,
that.
Right now we could use some accountants.
Full disclosure, my son just started working for IMF this year right out of college, and he's very happy, so he's not looking to leave, but I was just curious.
Oh, no, absolutely. But I have to say the one sort of group of skills that the intel community is actively in search for, and when I say the intel community, I'm also talking about the private sector. The private sector actually plays a big part in support to the intelligence community. If you read those Dana Priest articles, you got a sense of that. I'm not sure I necessarily in alignment with some of the analysis that was done there. But the private sector is very much a partner in support to the intelligence community. And in the field of cybersecurity, so folks who have computer skills, technology skills, math, highly sought after both in the public and private sector.
All right, let me reverse the question. Who need not apply? I mean, what mark on our record might we not want to even bother filing an application? I've heard people heavily in debt. I've heard people maybe were arrested, but not for anything awfully serious. But and somebody said, don't even bother. I don't know.
You know, that's actually that's another great question, because people just think I'm not going to apply because of, a previous history, drug usage, debt. And so they don't apply. And I would say go ahead and apply. In all honesty, in terms of the process for getting a security clearance, what is being looked for is the is those who are not honest about their background, and those who could be at some point later in their career brought on for a not so good cause. So they're the target. So a young person or an older person who comes in and says, "Well, I smoked marijuana as a college student." You'll be okay. Really, the
not a DEA though.
Not a DEA.
No.
But I think in most agencies, and I'm not promoting drug usage across the intelligence community. That's not it. But what I'm saying is, don't let your past drive your future. Because in all honesty, what's being looked for is honesty. And in terms of the kind of people that need not apply, well, anybody who's actively working against the interests of the United States need not apply. And that's pretty much it. So.
Yeah. I had a background clearance a couple of years ago, and for whatever reason, there was a hiccup on my college that I had graduated or not. And I did.
Right.
But it came out that I didn't. And the response was, the university shows that you didn't graduate. Please explain what happened, or basically, why did you lie to the federal government? And I never been accused of anything. And it got straightened out. Right. I guess two computers weren't talking to each other.
Right.
And
I think that's exactly it, Bob. I mean, if you're lying, we don't want you. So that's,
and they're going to find it.
Be honest.
Yeah. And we had a couple other folks. They were not denied, but they were delayed. They had a relative that lived overseas in an area not in the axis of evil countries, but close to it. And it was just cleared out, was it really a relative or was there somebody else? And it was fine, and the person was vetted.
Right, that's actually a really good point. Right now, our Director of National Intelligence is Jim Clapper. His predecessor was a fellow named Admiral Mike McConnell. Admiral McConnell actually engaged in a policy where he said he wanted the intelligence community to look more like the U.S. public in terms of more diversity. And so as a result, there was changes to some of the rules and policies related to the granting of security clearances, and second-generation Americans, those who are married to foreign nationals, those with foreign backgrounds, 10, 15 years ago need not apply, and that's not so much the case today. So there are a number of areas where things have changed in the last 5 years.
What if somebody doesn't necessarily have the attributes of the intelligence community, but is bright and got the credentials and could become brighter? Training. What training, this is probably way too broad to ask, what training do they offer? But could they take the neophyte and turn them into something else, or could they take somebody else that's a little bit more advanced? So I've always understood that training the intelligence community is almost second to none.
I think that's true. But if you're somebody who's looking to get into the intelligence community, what are some things you could do? There are, as I mentioned earlier, a number of graduate school, undergraduate programs in intelligence across the country, some pretty amazing programs. That's one way. Another way is to join some associations that work with the intelligence community. Mine is an example, the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. Part of getting into the intelligence community is networking, and it really is who you know. I'm sure you've had this discussion across government. I don't think the intel community is any different in that, sometimes getting in can be a daunting process. The processes that are established for applying for positions are pretty overwhelming. I've heard from so many people who say, I send my resume in and then I never hear anything back.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating. And that's, again, I think that's a a cross-government issue.
It is a cross-government. It's a huge problem. And I imagine it seriously impairs the government's ability to recruit top college graduates.
Right. That's, I think that's where
it's a serious issue, and they never seem to be able to solve it.
The Intel community actually has more hiring flexibility, so we don't have those problems, but still is hard. And so I would say taking the classes, joining the associations where there's seminars and there's white papers being developed and there's speaker series, really, you know, doing things like that to meet other people, to network, because really half of it is being identified by somebody. So,
well, you've been there and done it. So you were with the feds,
right?
Different agents. 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
23 years.
Yeah.
Okay. now you're not, but the alliance that you work with now, mm-hmm. I won't say work with, that you run now. What's their mission?
INSA, the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, is a not-for-profit. And we provide a venue for the public sector and the private sector to sit down and hash out policy issues, programmatic issues. Our board of directors is made up of both folks from the private sector and the public sector who work in the intelligence community or support the intelligence community. And so, you know, it's a chance to sort of think strategically and access resources that might not be in the government. As we're a not-for-profit, so we're not doing this for the money. And we're running a number of programs right now that are of interest to the intelligence community. We're looking at smart change. How can we work manpower acquisition and structural organizational issues more smartly? Let's look at lessons learned from the past, and let's not recreate some of the things we maybe that weren't so smart in the past and make some smarter change in the future. We're looking at homeland security intelligence. We're looking at acquisition reform. So we're taking on some big issues, putting together some recommendations, and then providing them to our government partners.
Do you oftentimes run into people or groups that you could refer then to an agency to say, hey, you might want to look at this person or these people?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we run an intern program, a very robust intern program, mostly graduate students, but we'll take, you know, anybody who has an interest and has the skills. You know, I'm proud to say every one of those folks have worked for us, done some very interesting things, and moved on to get jobs as a result of this in the Intel community.
Do you all have a website you wouldn't mind sharing with the audience?
Absolutely. We're insaonline.org, www.
Slow.
www.
Okay.
Insa, insaonline.org.
Great. And what if somebody clicks onto that, what are they going to see?
They're going to see what we're doing. They're going to see who we are. They're going to see how to get involved. They're going to see what we've done. We've had a number of events. We had this past summer, we provided the Baker Award, which is our biggest award for somebody who's shown lifelong commitment to the intelligence community, to Secretary Gates, who was also at one point the director of the CIA. We are having our next event is with Karen Wagner, who is the head of intelligence at the Department of Homeland Security. We will be having an event in December with Secretary Albright, Madeleine Albright, to provide awards to upcoming leaders in the intelligence community, those who are below the grade of GS-13 or equivalent in the private sector and academia, who show real leadership potential. This may be their first recognition. And we thought it was important to get their name out there and show that they could be the next directors of the CIA or the directors of National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. We're working a number of papers. We're doing some work in cyber intelligence and cybersecurity. So there's our website will give you a lot of information on what's going on. So.
And it's membership driven?
We're primarily membership driven. Yeah.
Now, do these members include individuals as well as corporations?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So academics, students, just people who are interested, for a very nominal fee, you can join.
Great. I didn't know it was that, actually, to be frank. I didn't know that before. But if anybody wants to talk to Alan, John, or me, 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. 3080. It's about 10:25 a.m. October. What is October? What 25th. We're on till about 10:58 and a half a.m. Eastern Time. Don't call after that, please. Please listen to the show. It's downloaded fairly frequently. But after that, if you call, you're not going to get anybody because we're live right now, but we're not going to be live. But certainly it can be downloaded. And for those listening, if they want to pass along to anybody, please do. We're oftentimes on agency intranets, gyms, and sometimes cafeterias, depending on the locale. The further outside the beltway you go, the more they'll listen to it at a cafeteria. Locally, they're not going to listen to it at a cafeteria, but they certainly might listen to it at the gym.
Right. I don't see why not. Or you can even listen to it at your desk off your computer.
Yeah. Or at home.
While you're doing your work.
All righty, so training, we've got top-notch training, and you have the ability, I guess, to offer a lot more training than the average agency, I would guess. Right. One, you got the budget, and two, you have the need. So you have more, I guess, I won't say more sophisticated training, not that other places don't have sophisticated training, but you have more focused training, I would suppose. All righty, you mentioned in your bullet points, I think they're on the web as well, abundant scholarships and financial aid, internships, cooperative education programs. So everybody's interested in scholarships and financial aid, but what makes the intelligence community more accessible to these than the others?
Well, I alluded to this a little earlier. We operate under a different set of authorities in terms of our personnel programs, which provide us for much more flexibilities than the rest of the federal workforce. We can hire people more directly. We can promote people more directly. We can, not that we'd want to do this, let people go more directly. But another side benefit is that we also have other programs that provide for training and education, for scholarships. Another program I mentioned was joint duty assignments, which is something that's actually being very closely looked at by the rest of the federal government right now, which is the concept that in order to be promoted to a senior executive level, you have to have done a rotation in another agency, another one of the intel community agencies, or in the private sector. The presumption is that future leaders in the intelligence community really should understand the whole community and not just the agency for which they became a part. That's a big deal. And that's I know it, certainly within the Department of Defense, they're looking at programs like this. But it's very hard under the current personnel practices to tell somebody that you have to do 2 years at another agency in order to be considered for promotion. But it's proving to be a very successful program within the IC, just because exposure, learning more, seeing how others work is very valuable. I would argue that joint duty can be achieved by spending some time in the private sector if you're a government employee as well. As you mentioned, Bob, I've left the government. I'm in the private sector in a not-for-profit basis, but my plan is to go back at some point. And I'll have to tell you that the time in the private sector has been very helpful.
Wow. To get your health insurance back?
That's part of it. I mean, certainly retire. But although it's interesting, I don't know if my health insurance is that much different than my federal health insurance now.
Oh, so you've got it.
Yeah, I do have it.
And you will have it in retirement?
If I go back.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's why a lot of people do return to the federal government.
Right. You were with the feds for a while. Mm-hmm. We've known each other for a long time, Ellen and I. And I kind of followed your career indirectly. And I heard that you were in the intelligence community. And I go, wow. Did you start in the intelligence community when you entered the federal government?
Yes.
Okay.
I worked for a newspaper in Annapolis, the Capital newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
The publisher was a advisor to the Secretary of Defense. Asked him, what should I be when I grow up? And he said, have you thought about intelligence? And his name was Phil Merrill, fabulous man, also a publisher of the Washingtonian magazine. And he provided me some advice. And I moved on to a federally funded research and development corporation as a result of him. Did some work for Naval Intelligence. Thought, wow, this is pretty neat. I was always nosy, so it really is all about being nosy. Did some work for Office of Naval Intelligence and started there back in the mid-80s. I sort of tripped upon it. We fortunately now, 20-some years later, we have much better recruiting programs and we're much more widely known. But at the time, this was the Cold War, you just didn't apply for jobs in the intelligence community. You tended to know somebody who...
We teach at one that was on the campus, if you will. It was on a social agency campus, and there was a, double agent. And they were found out at the time, and we were doing our retirement seminar. We have nothing to do with the intelligence community other than imparting, you know, the benefits and planning that we do. And there were more drills in that place the next day and wires. It was like Swiss cheese going through the walls. But it was on this campus that you just wouldn't think anything like that would be there. But it was. Now, it was a little different than the rest. It was had a wire on the top, the razor wire. And then you walked in, you go, ooh. But at the time, who knew? But this was in the papers. And I won't use names, and, right. and I don't think that's proper. But,
Speaking of benefits, I've taught at a couple different intelligence agencies, DOD Intel, and they're covered by the FERS. Or SERS if they're older people. But what about the CIA and some? Don't they have different benefit structures, different retirement systems?
Each of the intel agencies have their own personnel authorities. The DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, which was just created 5 years ago, has tried to bring some of those in alignment. So there's not a benefit offered at one intel agency that's not offered at another, since we are supposed to be operating as a community. Mm-hmm. But there are some differences. In terms of retirement, there are certainly some differences. But by and large, most of the intel community, most, fall under Title 10, Title 50. And there's mostly there are more similarities than there are differences in terms of retirement benefits.
I mean, like, and they use high threes for their
right,
and they just may the service component may be a little different.
Right. So actually, the intel folks who work within the military services, actually their personnel authorities fall under the intelligence side of the house. So you'll have people who work in naval intelligence who get different benefits than the civilians working in the Department of Navy.
I see.
It's very confusing to the manager who has to support both.
I see.
And when we go to these places, what we're teaching is apropos to all. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the person that will come up to you at the break, there'll be no name. They'll just be,
Joe.
and Joe, Jill, or whomever. And nice folks, but they can't be. And I remember there was this one, and they would call me, and I knew they weren't calling any place local. And then they just kind of drifted off, but they had special issues. And more recently, the intelligence community is brought into the tax law and given preferential treatment for example, like the sale of a principal residence. It was primarily for the military, and then Foreign Service got in. In other words, if you have a home and you're transferred out to the continental United States, or actually the intelligence community one inside the continental United States, right. And you don't have to sell it within 5 years. You could get up to 15 years. And that was not that. I think that's just three or four years old.
Wow.
So they have provisions for that. And then you have different provisions that if you're a temporary duty assignment, there's certain amounts you can exclude from income and the like. But it's only grown since 9/11. It wasn't there prior to 9/11.
Nope. That's true.
Yeah. So on the tax side, at least I know that much when I go to these places. Well, you have this special thing, and then I have it in the book, and they go, really? And I go, well, not all of you, but some of you, and nobody's going to raise their hand. But you can tell the ones that it applies to, and they go, really? Anyway, networking. Private sector groups, organizations like INSA, okay, that's you, but who else do you network? I mean, of course you're the best in the business, but
of course we are.
I knew that before you walked in the studio.
No, but there are other associations that support the intelligence community, and again, I would argue that this is a great way to look for opportunities across the government. I'm sure Department of Commerce has associations, and Department of Homeland Security, the non-intel side, does. So I would just argue that associations are a great way to identify, find out what's going on within whatever department you are interested in, and as an opportunity for networking, meeting people, and potentially finding opportunities. I will say, in something I haven't met, I've talked a lot about students getting in, but there are a lot of opportunities for non-students, for people who've had careers in other parts of the government who may not be ready for retirement. In terms of, there's programs within the Department of Defense and the intelligence community where we hire reemployed annuitants, people who have special skills, and quite frankly, we don't want to lose those skills. And again, if you're not, unless you have a wide network of contacts, or if you don't, organizations like INSA are a great way to meet people, to share what you know, and to potentially find a position if you're not ready to retire yet. You mentioned academia. Most of the universities across the country are doing some sort of work in national security programs. Go back and take a continuing education program and support a research program of some kind. Look for opportunities at war colleges and national labs. There's lots of venues. There's lots of ways to meet people, to share your skills, and to potentially find positions in the government or in the private sector. I should neglect to say that within INSA, most of our members are corporate members, and they're constantly looking for the right skill mix. Even in the economy we're in today. And again, I would say associations are a great way to make those connections.
We did a conference last year, military controllers, not air traffic controllers, bean counter controllers, mm-hmm. Accountant types. It was huge. I think there are 3,500 people there. Right. And we went as the vendor of seminars. Which I don't know if it was a mistake or not, but we were the lone cat there like that, and the rest were very sophisticated computer software houses, and you could tell the intelligence part. I mean, they weren't talking about it, but you could tell. If I just walk up and down and talk to the people, and some would say hi, most would not, if they knew what I was doing. And it was just very impressive to me, the size of the vendors, let alone the size of the group, 3,500 people.
Wow.
And they moved it. It was to be in Nashville right before the floods, and the floods came, and they moved it from Nashville to Orlando in 3 weeks, and you couldn't tell. It was seamless. And they held it at the Orlando Convention Center. And
good event planners.
Yeah, terrific. I couldn't go to all the sessions that I'd want to. I could go to something very general, and they were great sessions. Anyway, I got my taste there, and a couple other places we've been. When we go into some of these agencies, they'll have like lunchtime. I call them brown bag lunches, and they'll have different vendors come in. And it's tougher, I understand now, to get into these agencies than ever before. And there used to be companies that did it, but they don't do it anymore. So I guess you're there to be invited, but it's probably good so somebody can stop by at lunch and see the different people, right, rather than have to go off campus, if you will. So I always like going to these places. There's one that I go to, and there was two ways to get in. You could go one in the visitor's gate, or you could go in the back gate where, like, the trucks came in with produce and whatnot. But the dogs jumped in your car, and for some odd reason, I got a kick out of that. And we'd jump in the trunk, and then we'd go in the back seat. But after a while, you have to wait an hour in line for the dog to jump in your car, and that got old.
Right.
So I went in the front door instead of the back door. But it's kind of neat, and the things they put underneath your car, the mirrors, and they
right,
check
to make
their,
sure.
Yeah, the glove box and the trunk. And some people, I can't believe it, but some people get mad. And I go, I kind of said to one once, this is the wrong place to show your anger.
Yeah, and it is a different world we live in. That's sort of the sad truth.
Yeah, and chances are that you have to leave your cell phone in the car, or sometimes they have lock boxes. Mm-hmm. But whatever, you can't walk around with your cell phone. And so some people even find that a hardship. I don't, but,
I don't. I don't even bring it. I don't bring anything because I'm not going to walk a mile back to put it in the car.
I don't expect to get phone calls while I'm trying to teach a seminar. My thing's shut off anyway. But every agency has, even the non-intels, has their security apparatus you have to
right.
go through.
So. Intel has some pretty extreme security apparatus, though. And that's something that you have to think about. You mentioned who need not apply. And if you're views on privacy are so strict, you may not want to get a job in the intelligence community. You're going to go through a background investigation that's going to be pretty detailed. You're not going to be allowed to bring your cell phone into work or a lot of other toys that we
maybe
all have.
Maybe even a flash drive you can't bring?
Oh, no, flash drives.
Right,
no,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
No.
I would guess you couldn't do that.
That's very bad. There is the possibility that you could get deployed, even as a civilian. In most of the agencies now, you sign agreements that say at any time we could send you overseas or somewhere else.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that civilians and military and the intelligence community give up, but they do it because they really are patriots. They really want to support their country, and they understand that that's just a part of the job. There certainly are flexibilities in terms of four-day work weeks in some areas, but in other areas there's not so many flexibilities. And so if you are somebody who wants a strict 40-day work week, there's some portions of the intelligence community you may not want to consider applying for, because some positions do require that you work in extraordinary conditions over very different sort of work hours. But again, those are things that you have to know going into the game. So those, in answer to your question from a half an hour ago, Bob, those are the kind of people that need not apply.
Okay. Good, but
I'm slow.
the work week, I would imagine it's very demanding. So if your boss says, hey, what are your plans Sunday? You say, well, you know, you're not going to be in here. And there's no saying no, and there's no, gee, you know, maybe we can catch up next week or work late. It's now.
Right.
Right.
Right. I mean,
but you go in knowing that, I hope.
You better go in knowing that. It's not like that across. I mean, there are certain positions that don't require those kind of conditions. If you're in some of the support positions, although even those can require. If you're a budget person, if you're a bean counter, and it's a certain portion of the budget cycle, you'll be putting in some extraordinary time. But by and large, you go in knowing that it's not going to be your typical 9-to-5 job. There are going to be some requirements that are different than those in other federal agencies.
So this. Being a parent could be a problem for you. Yes, no,
I'm a parent, although I waited an awfully long time.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the jobs you're talking about where it could be odd hours, I mean, where you're missing a baseball game or whatever.
That, absolutely. Absolutely. That's, and that's something you have to go in knowing could happen.
Right.
But again, there's other opportunities. There's opportunities in the private sector that provide some flexible hours and work schedules. There are many programs in the government side within the intelligence community that offers much more flexible work schedules. Some of the analytics side or the support side. So there are opportunities for and there are numerous parents in the intelligence community. I have to say that's one of the wonderful changes that have occurred over the 20 years that I've been there. If you look at women in the intelligence community, when I started, senior women tended not to have families because they were working incredible hours and in incredible conditions, and that was something that they sacrificed to work in the intelligence community. And that's not so much the case today. We've changed some of our personnel practices to be able to accommodate children and taking care of older parents and school. And so they're really, we've come a long way in the 20 years that I've been here.
All because of you.
All because of me.
All righty. So we got challenging and rewarding. Some need not apply, most can. Small blemishes, I guess, on one's record, if you can explain it. Kind of like me with the background search. If you can explain it, they were fine.
Right.
Although they didn't like the letters that I sent back to them. But you know, I was talking about losing a livelihood or threat thereof. I don't think it would lie to anybody, let alone a federal agency. don't think so. And
you'd be surprised.
Why would anybody? That's beyond me. Why anybody would do it? Because they know how they can drill down. I mean, you can go to the movies, and you figure the movies aren't too far from reality. Maybe sometimes, but if they can do that, why would you want to put something down and say, "Oh, that's not true," or try to hide something?
Yeah,
it's going to come out.
And or Rubicon. I'm a big fan of Rubicon, which is about a fictitious intelligence agency. It's on AMC. First season just ended, and I mention it because I want the second season to occur. It's a terrific show. If you're a fan of intelligence, check out Rubicon on AMC just before Mad Men on Sunday nights, except the season has ended, although maybe you can get it in reruns or DVD, but we hope there's a second and third and so forth season. It really is a terrific show if you're interested in intelligence. And if you're going for a job in the intelligence community, if you can say you're a big fan of Rubicon, I'm sure they'll hire you
immediately.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about benefits because, John, you know benefits upside down and sideways and every other way. But, Ellen, what would be different on the benefits side in the intelligence community? I'd imagine, like John said, it's still the high three. But is there a shorter period? Sometimes, like with law enforcement. They have a shorter career and then they can go off to a second career. I mean, are there those kind of things or can you even say? I don't want to ask you anything you can't say.
Well, I'll say in terms of retirement, probably not. I think that's where certainly Title 10 and Title 50, which are the laws that primarily provide the framework for the intelligence community. On the personnel side, sort of model Title V, which is your civil service law. So they're very much the same in terms of retirement. How many years,
and
how old.
And they're covered by Social Security.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Virtually everybody is nowadays. And then they have some sort of 401k type.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
With matching funds.
Right. Well, it's FERS. It's the same.
Yeah. They have the TSP?
Oh, yeah. Yes. That's,
oh, okay.
That's what we follow. That's
I know.
What
I know the people I teach do, but
right.
I'm not
no,
sure.
No, most people in the intelligence community now
are in the thrift savings,
the thrift
actually
savings.
Participants right. in the thrift savings.
You know, when it started back in the early, what was it, mid-80s, that's...
Roughly, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you still have folks who fall under the older system, but that's it's the same. The differences really are in the hiring in the management side. We can bring people in at higher grades. There's a lot more flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
You can provide more in the way of promotion. You can promote people differently. There's some flexibility there. In the civil service side,
mm-hmm.
it's a year and a grade or a step.
Yeah, you have to be a year in grade. Right.
Do you participate with the SES? Is there a senior executive service within the intelligence community, or
yes,
is it their own?
We have to be a little different.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Yes, we have within the central intelligence agencies, their SISs, those agencies that fall within the Department of Defense, their Defense Intelligence Senior Executive Service. There are some differences in terms of how those groups are managed. Some have to go through the OPM process and review to be designated an SES, others don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I know the intel community is working on in terms of bringing those programs more in alignment. But I think the issue always was the OPM review. Can OPM, you know, are they if they don't have clearances or they're not, are they in a position to be able to grade and designate that this position is a intelligence SES? I think that was always the major issue.
Do they get special exemptions for lose leave? I would think because they might not be able to take the leave.
I'm not sure if there is any difference in the use or lose.
I mean, even in the regular government, if that's the word, you can carry over use or lose if work demands that you can't use it.
I know the BRAC folks
get this.
It's easy to
do. I had some leave carried over because of exigencies of work.
Right. And that applies to the intel community.
Yeah. It's a simple thing to get
done. Okay. All right. I see how much I learned from being around you all.
Another area of difference, though, as I'm thinking out loud, I'm sorry, is performance management. The intel community has been engaged in trying to implement a new personnel system that was focused very much on the performance management aspect of the job. And, of course, that's been a point of contention across the government right now as to whether we should move from a grade system to a banded system that gives managers much more authority and flexibility in terms of moving people up and down a pay band. And the intel community has been dabbling in that as well. One of the programs, the Defense Civilian Intelligence Personnel System, DCIPS, was being implemented across some agencies in the intelligence community, and then Congress actually put up its hands and said, slow down, out of some concern that its impact to women and minorities or concerns that managers weren't really trained to manage effectively. So we're very much like the rest of the government in terms of grappling with what is a personnel system that we should use and follow.
Yeah, there is an agency that has for years has had pay banding and pay for performance, and it seems to be working.
Are you talking about the National Geospatial Agency?
I'm talking about the controller of the currency in this case.
And NGA has as well.
There's another agency. And now, having said that, some managers, you know, don't like to make these performance-based pay decisions because they're, you know, there's a, yeah, it can be difficult on them and trying, but it's been working, I think, at that agency pretty well.
But I think change is hard, and so there's this fear that...
Yeah, well, NSPS with the DOD, is, I guess, defunct now.
Yes.
Pretty much most people have been put back in the old system, and I'm not saying it didn't work. It worked for a lot of people well, but for whatever... We won't get into that. That's a show in and of itself.
Okay. Ellen, I drive all the guests crazy with these same questions. I'd like to take somebody that is looking and going into the federal government, somebody who's been in the federal government mid-career and retirement, and say, okay, you're going to be my coach here, Ellen. And I just graduated from school, or I didn't graduate from school, and I want to be in the intelligence community. What should I buff up on my resume? What should I buff up in my experiences so that my resume will look better or my interview will sound better?
Right.
What do I do?
So there are two different groups you're talking about.
No, I want to do the kids.
The kids first,
then we'll talk about somebody that's within the government that's not in the intelligence community that wants to transfer over, and then mid-career and then retirement. So let's do the kids first.
For the kids, yeah. I think things to emphasize is travel, experience. If you have language skills, I would encourage anybody who's a parent or a young person listening right now, please, please pick up a language. It can only help you. We live in a global economy. We live in a global world right now. We need people who can speak more than one language.
Arabic would be really good.
But quite frankly, any language helps. If you just show a capacity to learn a language, we can teach you. But certainly... take a language class, emphasize your language, emphasize, again, experiences, travel, what you've accomplished. Emphasize in your resume your accomplishments, not just what you've done.
If you spent a year teaching at the American School in Morocco, for example, that would be a plus.
I wonder who did that.
My daughter did that, and now she's in...
I'm telling the young people now scare me in terms of their level of experience and things they've done. I know I couldn't compete now. You know, I worked at a country club, so I did depreciation schedules.
And you didn't work at a tax place.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what it, and really I would say focus on the accomplishments, even if you haven't traveled, even if you did work your way through school, you know, bartending, emphasize the things that you have accomplished, not just what you've done. That really, I think that applies in life. But when I look at a resume and I see, I did all of these, you know, I traveled here, you know, and this was what my job was, and I don't see what you did to make it better, I'm not so much interested. And I think that's some advice I would give to a young person.
Okay, now we're in the government for year two, three, four, five, and we like what we do, but... I kind of like going over and...
You'd like to make a change. It's amazing the number of people that I talk to who are working on the Hill for one committee and want to work in intelligence, or they're in another agency and they want to move into intelligence. And, of course, they're already in the government, so presumably it would be easier to sort of make that move. I would say that, again, it's getting to know people. It is really who you know that can be very helpful. And... you live in the Washington area, there's a very good chance that you are living near, working with somebody who has some connection into the intelligence community. I would say use your network, use your friends, use your family, because really that's, if somebody knows who you are, when your resume gets sent in, that is very helpful to have somebody say, you know, John Doe is a fabulous accountant in commerce and really could help us with developing our budget and the drug agency,
yeah,
DEA.
I mean,
that is really your best.
My son is in, as I said, in IMF, but the reason he got hired, which is tough to get hired at the IMF, I would think, normally, but his old baseball coach thought highly of him when he was a kid on his baseball team, and ergo, he got a job.
Right.
Obviously, the baseball coach works at IMF as an economist, and that's how he got a job. So your point about it's contacts and who right. you know can be critical. So don't forget, you know, those people in your past that might be able to help you.
Okay. Pre-retiree or recent retiree?
Well, I mentioned there are programs that certainly I believe are across federal government, but certainly the intelligence community has and uses reemployed annuitants, highly qualified experts, other programs. I don't even know the designations for all of them, but their focus really is retaining the skills of somebody who is ready to transition out of government or out of the private sector. And again, I would say what applied for the mid-grade and junior people applied to you as well, and that is keep your network up. But there's a lot of areas in intelligence where we need help, even though we're going through some changes. And in all honesty, if you look at the demographics of the intelligence community, we still are a fairly young community. We hired so many new people just after 9/11, and that was on the wake of the peace dividend of the 90s, where we let so many people go. So the demographics are different. We have a very young workforce. So for somebody who's looking to leave government or leave the private sector but is not ready to hang up their hat yet, and I would argue that in Intel you never really retire. You know, we are looking for some smart, experienced people who can come in and help guide the development of our younger workforce.
And Harrison Ford in one of those Jack, whatever his name was, movies. And
Jack Ryan. I know what you mean.
Jack Ryan. Yeah. They keep calling me back.
Right. It's hard. You never retire. So.
I have a friend.
That doesn't appeal to you that you're not a candidate.
That's right.
I have a friend that, and this is a real friend, and he speaks Spanish teacher, but also speaks one of the accents of evil language as well. And I said, you know, why don't you? And I don't know why. I don't know if he tried and didn't, but I would think that'd be in high demand.
Right. No, yeah. I would say absolutely. You know, keep trying. Be persistent.
For, let's say, a retired person. I'm thinking of a good friend of mine who speaks Arabic because he came here at 24 from Egypt. He's Egyptian. Now he's an American, of course, but he's a retired Fed. But I'm sure he wouldn't want to work full time. Is there any use for to people, you know, because of A, he speaks Arabic fluently, as well as, of course, English. He's a PhD, former professor in international studies, then went to work for the federal government and then retired. Is there any, but he wouldn't want to be a full time. Is there any use for somebody?
Oh,
like
absolutely.
That?
I mean, he can teach at one of the schools. He can work at some of the training facilities.
And he does, as I said, he's a former professor.
Can, I mentioned that there's been a lot of change in 20 years, so there's a lot more flexibility. There absolutely are opportunities for part-time people who want to work from home.
Yeah, and it would be from home because I think he's in I know he's in Williamsburg. I just visited him there.
All right, we got less than a minute. Final comments, Ellen, and how does one get to your website again?
www.insaonline, insaonline.org. Please come check us out.
Okay. And we will. John?
I will too, yeah. Check out Rubicon on AMC.
All righty. And check out next week's show. I don't even know what we're doing next week, but we'll be on. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.